Hello, and welcome to iDeveloper Live episode, I don't know, don't care anymore, it's something, and with me today in sunny, is it sunny San Francisco? We'll find out in a minute if it's sunny San Francisco, is the Skype call recorder is with me today, according to this, as you can see, it's... This is what we can currently see. So hopefully we can change that to Mr. John Fox. Hello, John. How are you?
I'm dandy. Tonight's episode, as suggested by Spectres, the history of British topsoil, part 7. Wait, hold on a second. That's all like... Oh, there we go.
Don't worry, the people out there are about 4 minutes behind us, so we can say what we like, and I might even have a chance to edit it between times. Are you still there, John?
I'm still here.
That's good. I can hear noises.
That was you turning that up before.
Oh, yeah, that's me, yeah. Cool, I don't know, we know what we're doing here. Now, also with me here in the studio, my office, is Mr. Steve Ballmer.
Hello!
Better known as... Mr. Simon Wolf. So, John, are you still there?
I'm still here.
We can't see you anymore, but there we are. John, I think it's time to give Simon the traditional welcome. Simon.
I think if I'm going to be Steve Ballmer, it should now change to ka-ching.
Ka-ching, or developers. And you need really sweaty arms, yeah, to make that come off. But as far as we're sat this close to each other, I suggest that you don't have sweaty armpits until later on when you're on your own time. Okay. Right, John, what sort of week have you had? What are you going to tell us all about this week?
Well, I had a kind of interesting, fun week last week. I was delving down into... iChat Theater's API, which was kind of interesting, trying to mix it up with core animation and not completely successful yet. I went and spent more time struggling with my Saga to get on the Mac App Store, and I realized that my son's walkie-talkie is left on and kind of out of reach right now, so at some point I'm going to have to stop talking and turn it off, otherwise we're going to be interrupted regularly by some random walkie-talkie broadcast.
I thought we were about to be invaded by some special forces unit for producing such controversial material.
Yeah. Yes. No. He's in the mud compound 2 doors down.
I was going to say, it's a bit like Bin Laden's compound there, isn't it?
So we're John Fox broadcasting live from Guantanamo Bay. There he is. There we are. So iChat Theatre and the core animation. So what were you trying to do with that then?
Well, I was experimenting with I've been wanting to add support for iChat Theatre and Memory Miner for a while, and I've had this dream for a while, and it was dashed when iChat Theatre's API came out because they didn't let me do what I wanted to do, and I thought, oh, well, you know, while I'm waiting for Apple to get back to me on the Apple Store, you know, the contract stuff, I will forge forward ahead with this stuff. Because what I want to be able to do is somewhat similar to what we do with podcast, where you have two people, you know, having a conversation, but you're recording the audio or video at both ends and then sync them up together. In this case, the discussion point would be, you know, a photograph, right? And you'd be tracking the motion. So if I was talking to my mom about something and panning and zooming around the photo, I want to be able to capture the pristine audio and or video on both sides and then put it back together and sync it up with what was happening in the photo by moving it around. So she's telling me about some particular person or something that's in the photo. I could then play that back.
So is this you revealing future features from Memory Miner here?
Oh, no. Was I doing them? No.
I don't know. So what were you finding awkward about it?
Well, so there normally the iChat Theater API says you can set any view as a video source. And so basically it will just track what's going on. But the problem is if the view is hosting, you know, CA layers – the drawing is not happening in DrawRect. It's happening, you know, on the layer tree, and it's being done on the video card, and so, you know, it's a separate kind of drawing path. So nothing shows up. So I was all looking through the API and reminding me how easy it was, and back when I was first looking at it, that's before I was using CA layer. So so then the alternative is that there's a delegate method that allows you to render into, you know, something like an editing context, and then they give you a timestamp, so you can basically do your custom drawing. But the problem for for custom drawing of CA layers is there. If you want to take into consideration any animation state or any transforms, it's not at all clear to me how to do that. So that's going to be my question for the labs, because there's a CA layer render in context method, but it says, and it's true, it doesn't take into consideration any animation that's applied to it and or any transforms. So it's not really all that useful. So, but the reality is that when you're doing iChat, you have to kind of rethink, you have to think carefully about what you're trying to do, because you know, you have to think and you have to take in consideration the network between, you know, you and who you're talking with. So it's not like you're going to get 30 frames of animation, in which case it may not be worth doing it. So the approach I was taking is saying, well, forget about that. You know, I know which image that I have and I'll just render it into the graphics context. And, you know, I'll forget about trying to show the smooth animation. I'll just basically, you know, show the end state. So here I am in one state. And if I pan to a specific area, I'll wait till the animation is finished and then refresh the image that I'm going to send out into the video stream. Is that a lot more detail than maybe you wanted?
No, I think that's reasonable, because now there's a good chance that someone in the chat room could answer your question once they catch up with it. Of course, again this week, for some reason, I'm struggling to see the chat room, so I'll get that sorted out in a minute. So, but anyway, maybe we should ask Simon, because this week Simon has become a games developer.
I have. I've
given up on boring business software like the rest of us and decided to become a games
developer. I've gone trendy.
Games developers know everything there is to know about animation and graphics and everything else. So I'm sure Simon is going to have the answer for you.
Oh, I was actually going to say, have you, although you're tying it in with iChat itself, have you thought of just doing effectively a screen capture at your end, say, of the recording and doing that independently, and you sort of do lots and lots of image captures and string them together into a video file?
Well, no, I mean, because what I'm trying to do, you know, the reason why I want to do this is because it in many ways replicating the experience of sitting around and telling stories with a photo album. And the problem is that the available opportunities to do that in life are somewhat limited. Especially if your family lives all over the place. And so, you know, the key thing I want is the audio. It's not so much that I care about capturing what's moving along on the image as I am to be able to know what I was looking at, what was being highlighted at a specific point in time. In other words, if my mom's telling me about this person that's in there, well, I want to be able to capture that as a marker in the audio stream so that I can, you know, replay it, right? And it's not at all, you know, the other problem with it is that the APIs for recording the audio basically only allow you to record the entire thing. So you can require, you know, record both audio channels, or you can record the entire video, you know, the video along with audios as if it was a screen movie of the iChat window. And that's not really what I want either. And the problem I was running into back in 10.5 is that they weren't using the modern QuickTime stack. So once iChat got a hold of the video digitizing device and the audio device, no other software could get a hold of it. And that doesn't seem to be the case anymore. So that's kind of a good thing. So it's more of a challenge of how do you synchronize the start and stop of recording streams on two different machines that are across the network, and there's some latency, right? So you want to basically say, at this specific point in time, start a countdown and make sure that the audio is you know, you don't have to tell people, please press record now. You want the software to do it for you. So that involves some other way of sending that communication between the two. So, you know, maybe XMPP or who knows. But it's pretty complicated. So, but it's something I've been wanting to do for a long, long time. And I think if I can get it right, it'll be quite cool.
I sense an NS Conference 2012 session coming on here, don't you?
Yep.
I would say
he just books himself in.
I think, yeah, exactly. Once you have spent 6 months solving this, you can tell the rest of us how to do it in 30 minutes.
Exactly.
Now, that's the idea of this.
Yeah. Now, speaking of NS Conference thing, I was very happy to see that all the videos were out there and that the video of the Coco Rumble is up. Because really, that was the most important part of NS Conference, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, often in the past, we've not released a video of the Coco Rumble, but we thought we would this time, especially as we lost Mike Lee's talk, which...
We didn't lose it.
It was a camera problem, so we didn't get the whole talk.
Can you not do audio only with the slides?
No, because the audio was going onto the camera as well. Okay. Even though it was going through a mixing system, for convenience, we capture the audio and the video together and then split them again when we when we get home. And we got some of it, but it just didn't, you know, it just felt a bit funny releasing half a talk in whatever else. So, but actually he's posted it today from, he did the same talk a couple of weeks later at OpCon, I think it was. 2011 in London, and they've posted the video of that. Now, of course, he didn't do it anywhere near as good as he did at NS Conference, but he was in the same pirate outfit, and the essence of the talk was the same, so that's good. But that was a bit of a bummer. That's the first talk we've lost in four goes.
Yep.
We won't do it again. I have removed one of Dave's legs. as a punishment.
So now he'll say, hop to it, Dave. And it'll be literally true.
So, But people have been giving good feedback on them, and they've been downloading them. In fact, the reason Simon is here in the studio is his piece of string in the county where he lives is thinner than the piece of string we have here that we call
broadband. Much worse.
He's using what used to be known as dial-up. It was just before that. It's called drive-up data technology, where he has driven here so that
it's quicker for me to drive and collect it.
But equally, next week, we release your course, Simon.
Oh, good. I won't be able to download.
But you can take a copy away today. So next week, we are going to be releasing QuickTime Introduction to QuickTime video course as well. So hopefully that will go well as well.
So I should have waited another week before changing the car, because I could have gone to look at Aston's.
Of course, yes, because we are expecting to sell at least 7-8 copies, I would have thought, before...
So you can have an Aston, it's just going to be a 1/100th scale.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's die-cast replica made in China.
That I'll have to keep in the box to maintain the value.
So John, just looking back across the NS Conference videos, now I'm sure that you haven't had to watch them all yet, you're a busy man, but as you went back, you saw all those sessions again, did it remind you of any particular favourite that you had?
I think they were all quite good. You know, what was the most impressive to me that I hadn't expected was Tim Eisted's. And I don't mean that to, I had no idea that he, because I only knew him from his books, and I never saw him speak before. And, debugging is something I'm just terrible at. You know, I can barely type GDB, and the depth and breadth of content that he provided, and very, very useful tricks, was stunning to me, from a pure technical level. And then his presentation style and the quality of his keynote, and how clever he was with having, pre-recorded all the screen captures. I thought it was very slick, very smooth, very informative. He was one of the best speakers, I thought.
Yeah, Tim was a great, great, great talk, I thought. And in fact, I'd say they were all good this year, I thought. But equally, the step up in the keynote presentations, the fact that people want to show code. People want to show code being manipulated, but live demos, they just go wrong. So that the effort a lot of people have put in to record the code and showing the code changing and then integrating that into keynote. And Tim's timing, along with his videos for his keynote, for his presentation, was fantastic. I will give Tim a big thumbs up. He's a well-worthy watch.
Yep. Definitely.
We're hearing on the chat room that some people thought Gemmell's talk was awesome as well. Now, what Matt Gemmell did was a talk on how to really annoy your users, which was...
How to be evil, wasn't it?
Yeah. How to be evil, yeah. And he was particularly good at being evil, I felt.
It's that menacing Scottish accent that he's got.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, good. Of course, the Coco Rumble, where John Fox appears in a dress.
Worth the price of admission.
That's worth the $99 for the video videos on their own. Well, if you want to see John Fox, I mean, you've seen him in a state of undress on this podcast if you've ever tuned in. And thank you for wearing clothes today, they say in the chat room, John. To see John as Graham Lee's mum was,
something, wasn't it?
I have to say it was one of the highlights of my life, yep. I think.
Yeah, but the amazing thing was, so there's a section on it where the voting comes up, and I was like, I was not satisfied with the applause, so I started lifting the dress, and the applause died, so I let it die.
Oh dear! I think we need to move swiftly on. Yeah, so folks, if you weren't able to come to NS Conference. Then the videos of the main sessions are up. So there's 21 of them, I think. It's $99. And we will be releasing the Blitz talks that went on at the same time. Now, we have recorded 22. of them, but we haven't processed them yet. Well, we're in the process of processing them, so I can't guarantee all 22 will make it. Obviously, after our disaster with Mike's one, I don't want to make any promises I can't keep. But as many of the Blitz talks as we managed to competently keep will be added to that pack. So that'll be a free upgrade, hopefully within the next week or two. Dave is working on them now and splicing those together. So that'll be, yeah. Okay, I know I'm doing my own promos here, but I think 42 technical videos for $99.
That's good. Is that what have you sold them for previously? Have they always been $99?
No, they've been far more before. I think it's 100. I think the cheapest we've ever done them was 150, but that was when we were only sort of talking about 10 sessions or so at the time. The price may go up a little bit when all of them are out, when all 40 are in there. But so if you buy now, before the whole thing is released, then you can get $99, and we'll getting good feedback. So lots of people saying they think it's good value, so that's good. No one's complained yet. I'm sure we'll get a complaint or two now and again. You can't keep all of the people happy all of the time, can you?
And you can't kill all the people who complain all the time either.
John, I wouldn't want to. John, I wouldn't. In fact, we have a refund policy of, you know, if you're not happy, we'll just give you your money back, and we don't bother asking questions. We do ask people to say why. They don't have to get their money back. And compared to the number of videos we've sold, I think in the past 12 months I've issued maybe 5 refunds or so. And it's often for reasons that, you know, people actually realise, you know, especially the Objective-C course, they were trying to learn to be programmers, and it was, I don't think I'm going to be up to this. But yeah, but that's fine. We give it back to them anyway, because, I mean, it's people say, oh, but it's digital, it's cost-free. Everyone knows there is a cost. There's a cost to your time. Mm-hmm. There's a cost to your transaction fees that have already been processed and you already have to pay. In fact, the sales processor we use charges us to do a refund. I'm not complaining about that. That's fair. So there is a cost. But, you know, at the same time, I don't want anybody to give me money who's not happy with what they've got. So it's a full refund if you don't like it. So there we are. And then we just send people around your house to beat you up. But there we are. Okay. Now, Simon, I'm really interested to know. I mean, you know, I thought game development was a young man's game.
That's why I'm doing it, and you're not.
Right, okay. tell us. I mean, you tweeted this week that you're really enjoying having to. I mean, you've been subcontracted to help work on developing a game, which we can't talk about the game, obviously, because it's not released or anything like that. But you're in that position. So, but you tweeted, oh, it's so much fun doing something just totally different. Mm-hmm. So what is it about it that's just making you...
I think it's a combination of two things. You obviously have the initial stages that you have with any application development, where you've got to think about the overall UI and the design and the model and, you know, the whole MVC structure and how things are going to slot together. But on top of that, you've then obviously got all the game logic that goes on into it and the thoughts about the rules of the game and how you can add value to the game. Now, obviously, this is a bit of a hot topic because in-app purchases at the moment are obviously a bit of an issue. But it's the whole sort of thing. It expands beyond just what is usually a fairly tight scope for a business style application into something that's much more fluid, because you start thinking about, well, we could start doing extra game packs that will include these features, or we can have extra themes so that you can skin the game and things like that. So it's sort of a much broader spectrum of areas that you're covering that you need to think about very, very early on in the process, because when you're designing sort of the underlying sort of architecture and structure of the application, you obviously want to be able to put in the ability to do things like skinning and to load in extra modules. And not get to the stage where you've developed a sort of a version one of the game, and then it's, well, actually, I'm going to have to rip all of that stuff out because now I want to change what the graphics are in it. So it's sort of more of a challenge like that. It's obviously not sort of a million miles away from developing an application as you normally would, but it's an extra sort of twist on it. Now, this is a nice halfway for me as well. It's not sort of an action platform game where I've got to worry about collision detection and things like that and those sort of complexities. It's a much more sort of placid game and more of a sort of a thought-driven game.
Oh, rubbish for me and John then.
Yeah, yeah. So well, John, it's John
like
might be all right.
San Francisco, but... let's collaborate and make rainbows and unicorns type of game. Yeah. Build a brighter world.
The Rapture game, we're just a bit late for it.
I said, yeah, that's right. So, yeah, we forgot to mention that in the news section. We're still here.
Well, it was a bit of non-news, really, wasn't it? So, yeah. But no, I mean, it's just quite interesting. It's a whole different sort of approach. I've never really done a game before, so it was just the added sort of twist of having to consider a lot more internal logic rather than just having sort of the more traditional rules of I need to validate the data that this user's putting in, or I need to go through these sort of particular steps and hoops. It's a much sort of wider, in a way, sort of fuzzier set of things that you have to consider and plan for and think about. And it's great fun, you know. It's like a different sort of mental exercise. It in itself is a bit of a puzzle because, you know, you have to start considering what the future is going to be much more, and how it will all work and how the gameplay will work and things like that, and any artificial intelligence that's got to go in it as well.
So, I mean, are you writing this from scratch or using any sort of game framework?
No, this is going to be completely from scratch.
Okay, so my next question, I mean, you've just said a whole bunch of stuff there. Oh, I've got to think about this for the future and I've got to think about that for the future. Don't you actually think, actually, we should be thinking about that for the future for our apps anyway? It's just that the game sort of naturally forces you into thinking that way, whereas for our apps, we tend to be a bit more closed on, I need this feature, this feature, this feature, and don't really think future the same way.
I think for a normal app, I say normal app, for an app, you do think about what you're going to be doing. You think about what you're going to be doing for version 2 or version 3 or beyond, and you have ideas and rough plans. But you don't generally go into, say, a productivity application and think, okay, one of the major things in this is going to be able to let somebody buy an extra graphics pack that's going to make the whole thing look totally different. Because you don't have that sort of functionality normally in a productivity application. You know, in something like a to-do manager, you may have icon packs that somebody can, you know, buy and they can assign those to their tasks. But it's not much more than that. It's not sort of, right, I now need to change the entire user interface. And it's not things like, you know, effectively having to create almost like an API in the application for your own use so that you can plug in extra modules and extra ideas. Sort of productivity apps, business apps, things like that, they're usually much more tightly focused. You know what features you're going to add, but it's not dependent on having a central structure to the application that allows you to add in almost sort of random functionality. It's having that sort of openness in the design that's quite challenging.
But isn't a lot of this requirement driven by the you know, kind of the sales and marketing, whatever, realities of a game? And that, you know, seems like most games are, if not free to begin with, dirt cheap, like 99 cents, and they only ever hope to make money by people buying levels.
Yes, so, definitely. Right, that's... But I think that's where you can almost sort of split this sort of development in two. You can say there's this game's model where there is the whole marketing and revenue generation consideration from the off, and that's one of the core bits when you're initially designing the thing. And then you have sort of the non-gaming applications where you are focusing on building sort of particular features, and then you'll say, okay, this extra feature I want to put in as a version 2 or a version 3 feature, which is going to enhance what the application can do. But it's not necessarily going, you're not necessarily thinking of it as, well, I'll keep that for version 2 because then I can charge a bit extra for it. And I can increase my revenue from it.
I'm sorry, and did you say that you were working on this thing start to finish, all of you, or are you working with anyone else on it?
I'm working with a couple of designers, and that's it. Little old me and a couple of designers, which is going to be interesting. I mean, it's not, in its sort of its fundamentals, it's not a very complicated game. It's not a huge scope. There's enough to keep me busy for a while, but it's not the sort of thing where naturally somebody, you know, if somebody come to me with the idea, I would have said, okay, this is going to need a team of 5 or 6 developers. It's not sort of big enough and complex enough for that. There may be areas of it where I have to say to other developers, I need you to come and help out with this and do that. But I think getting the core of the game engine in there is perfectly doable for a solo developer. Especially because with the game, because they are very sort of focused on the UI and the look and the feel and everything else, an awful lot of it is done by the graphics designers who are going away and they're building or designing the user interface, they're providing the graphics. And so much more of my work at the initial stage is just building an underlying structural framework for it all to sit on and sort of putting in the game rules and the behavior like that. But it's not horrendously complex by any stretch of the imagination. Which, in a way, is another thing that was a not a revelation to me, but it's something that you don't really think about in advance because you think, I'm going to write a game, and you think, they're going to be horribly complex. You know, you know about sort of Xbox games and things where they're pouring millions and millions of dollars into these things and have huge development teams. doing a game for an iOS device, you know, you're generally dealing with a much smaller focus. But actually, it's not fundamentally different. You know, you're still doing the same sorts of things you're doing for any other application. It's just that you've got to plan ahead, as you say, for sort of the marketing and sales side of it, how you're going to give this game longevity and how you're going to keep pulling people into it and keep people using it and keep selling extras and add-on packs and things like that.
That's, to me, you've just used words there, how I'm going to give it longevity, because actually that is something that many of the iOS games, people haven't cared about that. This is a game, I'm going to charge 99 cents for it, or, you know, 59p or whatever it is. People will buy it, they'll use it for a week, then they'll be bored of it, they'll throw it away, but it's fine because it was 50 pence, it was less than a candy bar. And so they don't necessarily think about how they're going to keep that going forward. So, you know, but that's created an expectation of sort of 99 cents, 1.99 games. So, you know, I mean, obviously you're not involved necessarily in the selling of this game or the marketing of it, but you know, that must be a far harder decision now to say, how are we going to do this stuff right in release one in order to keep going for release two, release three, release four, when you know all your competition isn't, you're going to probably be priced against your competition, and you know it's a tough market to sell into.
I think it depends on the type of game you're doing, I think, and what you're targeting it towards and how you perceive it and its value from the off. If you sit down and think, I'm gonna knock together a game this weekend and I'll stick it up on the App Store at 59p or 99 cents and we're going to see how many sales we can get and then I'll just effectively throw the whole thing away. We might get a bug release update to it, but that's probably going to be it. Or whether you think about it as, this is more of a longer-term investment. This needs to be something that we can build on, and it can evolve and it can grow. And if you look at sort of the big games in the App Store, things like Angry Birds, to a degree things like Doodle Jump, they are games that have had extra features added on. They've had different versions brought out. They've got sort of different themes. They've got different skins. There are seasonal editions. So whether or not that was part of the original design, and I suspect with most of them it probably was, there's this whole sort of concept and drive towards having something that people, you need to get the people to come back into your application. Now, whether it's because you're advertising driven and you need people to keep loading it and playing it so you can get the revenue, or whether it's because you want them to come back in and say, oh, great, there's a new feature that I can buy through an in-app purchase. You need to get people to keep loading your application. Because if somebody just buys it and tries the game for 5 minutes, great, deletes it, never plays it again, you're not going to maximize how you can generate revenue from it. It's a very, very short-term, narrow view of how to generate money from the App Store, and I don't think it's the right way to do it. I think it's a much better approach to think of it as a long-term project that you're going to have to invest time and money, and it will probably be a loss leader because you've got to get the initial version out there, and then you can start adding the value element of it where people can buy the extra features and where people will come back in and you'll get your advertising revenue from it. But I think, unless it's something really, really basic, just designing a game or even an application where somebody's just going to literally use it for 3 minutes, say, yeah, that was a bit of fun, but now I'll delete it or I'll never go into it again, I just think that's pointless. And as a developer, I wouldn't want to develop something like that because you can't really take any pride in something like that. You're almost designing it to be disposable. And I think one of the great things about the developer community in the main, not across the board, but in the main, is that it's a group of people who want to build quality products. And it was certainly true on the Mac. It's varied a lot on the iOS devices, but it, you know, there is predominantly a group of developers who are still interested in producing quality applications. They're not just there to get something on the store and see if they can generate a quick win and some money out of it and then just move on.
Now, have you already visited the factory in China that's going to produce the millions and millions of plush, you know, stuffed animals based on the characters in your game? Since that's
of course, how of course, yeah. I was actually inspired by Mr. Graham Lee today, showing off his latest marketing toy. Did you guys see that?
No, what's Graham?
His little fuzzy alien.
He's done a fuzzy alien,
which you'll be able to get at WWDC.
Right. Where was he advertising that then?
On Twitter today.
Okay, I didn't hear that. Wow.
So you've obviously been working and not just sitting on Twitter all day.
I'm going to pretend I've been working. Yeah, it's here. So fuzzy alien. See, he's taking fuzzy aliens to WWDC. Well, I can't get into WWDC, so I'm not taking anything
In fact, my only tweet about WWDC today is I was quite grateful to realise that because I haven't got a ticket, I'm not going to have to sit through endless hours of Lady Gaga before every session.
You think that's what they're going to be playing?
I think it probably will.
Isn't that the last couple of years? Hasn't that been the in thing for WWDC sessions?
Have a look at his blog.
We're having a look at his blog. Right, okay. We have Graham and a fuzzy alien. Let's see if we can get this onto the screen for those people who are watching. There we are. Let's put Graham up. That's Graham. It's probably going to come out really rubbish where you are. If you want to go to WWDC, I think that's well worth $1,500.
I think so. It looks like a quality product.
Get one of those fuzzy aliens. There we are. And if that doesn't mean that you really want to subscribe to Graham's blog or hire him at some very, very high hourly rates, then nothing will ever work.
Yep.
That's good. Right, before we move on, we were talking just before the show about you bought some new software today as well.
Yes.
What were you buying?
Mr. Lee did a tweet early today about an area that I know next to nothing about, all to do with sort of HTML5 and CSS and dynamic web pages. And I went and had a look. Now, I haven't actually tried this application yet. I've watched the videos and I bought it. It's called Hype. By a company called Tumult, I guess. It's on the App Store, the Mac App Store. This is a Mac application, and it looks great. It basically lets you construct web pages and content, sort of images and text and shapes, and you can do all sort of the usual animation and effects on it. And it looks like the sort of simple user interface and things that even a dunce like me can use. And create some nice looking stuff on my website, and it's the kind of stuff I guess that will help reduce at least the prevalence of Flash, because it's making sort of HTML5 websites much easier to create.
Yeah, and the thing that cracks me up about the whole thing is that, you know, Adobe spent so much time trying to preserve Flash. And, you know, they've succeeded in some way, but in all reality, everybody was saying, you know, why don't you put that same energy in making tools that support output in these formats? And, you know, Adobe was always saying, well, you know, as long as IE6 is in use, you need Flash, so tough. And then all of a sudden, you know, comes IE9 and comes along Chrome and Firefox. And I think by now, there really is a critical mass of modern browsers to which you can address, you know, pages built with these technologies. And what's impressive to me is that they, you know, I haven't tested it myself. I mean, I did get the application and output it, and I looked at it in the results in Safari and Chrome and Firefox. I didn't look at it in IE, but it does perform pretty decently. And so they degrade it. So if you don't have the advanced CSS transforms, it will fall back to you know, JavaScript-based animation, which works, but it's a bit slower. And if you don't have that, then presumably it just shows the static images. And that's the tricky part that nobody else wants to do. So here you have this nice graphical tool where, you know, you take an object, put it on screen, set its properties, whether it's, you know, its opacity or its size. You press record, move it to another location, change the values that you want for it, and it then tweens it all for you. And the other thing that was very impressive about it is the JavaScript that they export. You know, they didn't just go out and you know, steal somebody's, you know, jQuery module. They seem to have written it all from scratch, and it's very compact. I mean, I don't know. And you know, the other thing I would have to say, now that we're you know, hyping hype for them, is if you look at their website, I think they did everything right for a self-service website. You know, it's very easy to see what the app does. The screen movie is short and sweet. They have press pages, which are exactly how they should be done, where they said, here's the, you know, the very short description that you can tweet. Here's a slightly longer one, and here's some text, which if you're going to, you know, write an article, you could just put that up there, grab some pictures that they make available, sign your name to it, and all of a sudden you've written yourself a, you know, a reasonable article about something cool. And as a result, I think they've gotten lots of good press. So, you know, I don't know. I've never heard of these guys before and have no idea whether they listen, but you guys did a great job. Congratulations.
That is that is a nice looking website. That is, it's clean, it's effective, it's simple, but it just looks like, you know, it looks like they've put effort into it. I like that. That's good. I just pasted the link into the chat room. If I ever produce show notes, then the link will be in there. And if I don't, well, you should have been listening live with the 12 other people. There we are. It's in there. Okay, and another piece of software that's come out, I think, since the last show, something I was on the beta or beta, depending on which side of the Atlantic you come from, was Fantastical, which seems to have caused a stir. Have you been into Fantastical, John?
That's the to-do list thingy that has the nice animation as you type in.
Well,
you
know, no, it's actually, it's an, I'm going to call it an iCal interface. In other words, it's a way of seeing what's in your iCal for today or any other day. But its main feature is about getting new events into iCal, and they've written a natural language translator. So, you know, I could just write meet John for lunch at the pub at 12:30 on Tuesday next week, and it would translate that into an iCal event with all the right fields. But then, you know, meet John for lunch, it would have the location as being the pub, it would put the date in as Tuesday, and it would find the start time is whatever it is. As I have to say, as a you know, the natural language, it's absolutely stunningly good.
That was very impressive,
and I'm sort of, I've sent an email to the guys who have been writing this. I mean, it's been great right throughout the beta, and I really want them to come on and tell us a little bit about how they had to write this and doing it, because I think it's fascinating. And I just want to say to them, this is one of those cases of this software. You might actually say, well, it gets me puts events into my calendar, and you say, so what? But actually, the point is, you can say so what because they have done such a good job.
But this is almost one of those applications where it runs the risk of, it has more appeal almost to developers, because we sit there and go, that's really impressive, I wonder how they did it, as opposed to, say, my dad, who will just use it and take it for granted that this stuff happens. And in a way, it's great that they've done this and this stuff happens, and therefore the user experience for somebody is terribly simple and terribly easy. But as a developer, you've said, get them on the show, because I'm really interested to know or find out a bit about how they did it and the logic they used and things like that. It's as a technical application and a sort of a showcase of the things you can do, I think it's really, really good.
Yeah, we will try to get them on. I can't make any promises because they've not responded to me yet. But I've sent the email, and we'll see what happens. But that'll be good. Right, we're coming up to near the end of the show. But I just another thing I want to talk to, because I have got a ticket for a conference when I go to San Francisco. I'm not going out to San Francisco to totally not conference at all. And I understand, John, you're speaking at this conference. I didn't realise that. When you said, come and join me at this conference, I thought we were going to go as buddies. We were going to go and hang out together and spend some time. And you're a speaker. You just wanted me to come so you had some audience.
No. From what I understand, actually, a lot of people are coming. So, no, it's going to be good. It's the Cappuccino Conference. And the website is now, there's some real information about it. So you have lists of some of the speakers that are there and a little bit of background and details. And I think it's going to be quite good.
Okay, so tell us more about it. Tell us a little bit more about it, because, it's Cappuccino. Just remind everyone what Cappuccino is, first of all.
Cappuccino is cocoa for the web. There's the pat description for it. So, and this is the first conference of it, and they had it on the 11th and 12th. So it's a Saturday and Sunday following WWDC. It's $199. There are a number of speakers, a number of events. So it has kind of a flavor of a WWDC or one of these, NS conference or kind of, the indie conferences. There's a State of the Union, talks about where the technology is and presumably some of the things that are coming up new. But what's nice about it is that they talk about it, all the aspects of delivering a great cappuccino app, which includes the design, includes the software engineering part of it, includes how do you deploy it. Because particularly with web apps, there are all these other pieces. You certainly have to high bar to cross for the quality of the design if you're going to get anybody to pay attention to it. But when you're deploying an app to the web, there are all the other questions about, well, what type of hosting provider are you going to do, what backend framework are you going to use for storing your data, and so there's going to be a lot of focus on that. The bit that I'm talking about is, it's going to be a in many ways just an update of the talk I gave at NS Conference, because what's nice is that the framework is moving so fast that some of the issues that I talked about, about, for instance, not working with Xcode 4 back when NS Conference was taking place, well, that's been answered now. So it's kind of interesting. If you are a Cocoa developer, the tools and the familiarity and the integration with your existing Xcode 4 workflow are just getting better and better.
Well, I mean, it's great. It's fantastic to see Wolf Wrench is speaking there. Mm. Looking forward to catching up with Wolf again and see him. And obviously, since his he's living out what he preaches here, because he's very much a man who says you should go search out new technologies and not just sit with the old. And I know one of his reasons behind C4 was his closing was his frustration that he didn't feel developers were doing that. So to see him speaking there is great. A couple of the guys from SOFA are speaking. So that's like catching up with them again, because obviously they're reasonably local to us, being only one country
in
away.
Amsterdam.
Yes. And Francisco himself is there, which is great. One of the developers. It's John Fox, of course, who is the main draw for here, which is why they've put him at the bottom of the page.
That's to build up anticipation.
Yeah, he is the foundation on which everyone else is being supported.
Yeah, standing on my drooping shoulders.
Yeah, that's what they say. So I am going to be hanging around in San Francisco for the 11th and 12th. In fact, I fly out on the 12th. But I've actually bought my air ticket now, so I'm committed. In fact, I bought my ticket to the conference as well, so I'm committed.
So, like a pig at a ham and egg breakfast.
That's the sort of level of commitment, John, that I am involved in. Then it is half measure stuff. So, okay, we're just going to close down now with WWDC is getting even closer. We've been doing some WWDC top tips and whatever else. But I think we're going to do one of those and a prediction. So, John, I'm going to start with you. Give me a tip for WWDC and a prediction.
All right. Well, the tip is, you know, while there are lots of parties and it's great to go to all the parties, don't be stupid and get pissing drunk every night. It's just, you know, you only have a limited number of hours that you're going to have to be able to spend, you know, with your peers, asking them questions and getting engineering and help. And if you spend the entire next day kind of worn out and broken, you're missing an opportunity. It's not to say don't go out and have a great time, but pace yourself, you know. So that's my paternalistic tip, but it may be worth listening to. And my prediction, I predict that we will finally see some interesting network APIs from Apple. You know, they made some furtive moments some years ago with what they called, you know, rendezvous, wide area rendezvous, and I was so excited when it came out, and then it kind of disappeared, never came of anything. .Mac was, you know, a bit of a disappointment. MobileMe, the apps are better, are kind of slightly better. But there was nothing that was a big help. And if you remember what I was talking about with the, you know, iChat Theater and how do I do synchronized, you know, data transfers and that type of thing in real time, This is mostly an expression of my hope. I have no reason to know this is going to be true. But since they did buy the data center, and since they have to have done a lot of technology to be able to make this, you know, cloud-based iTunes that everybody's been talking about a reality, I think that some of this API goodness is going to be made available to ordinary developers like you and me.
Wow. Do you think he is a guru and a genius, or do you think he's talking out of his backside?
I think a bit of both. I'll sit on the fence with that. I hope Apple are going to address the issue of cross-platform synchronization and cross-device synchronization so that they make it much easier to transfer data between your iOS devices.
At a core data level or at any level?
I think it'll be at a core data level. I think there'll be some sort of server-based tool that will come as part of MobileMe. Sort of an upgrade to the current syncing stuff.
That would be fairly typical now that there are a number of people out there who have just finished getting up to a decent level, some core data syncing frameworks. It would be fairly typical for Apple
It'll be typical for them to do it. Yeah. I think it's an area that Apple at some point are going to have to address, because it's becoming sort of more and more important, I think. I think as more people are getting Macs because they've got iOS devices, I think they'd be crazy not to encourage or simplify the ways that developers can start to synchronize data across the two.
Okay. And your tip?
My tip is to not be a wallflower. Enjoy being in a community of developers. Enjoy being there with 5,000 other developers. But don't be shy. Don't sort of sit in a corner somewhere and try and hide or sit in a session and not communicate with anyone. The big benefit of going there is meeting people and talking to people and getting to know other developers. Otherwise, you might as well just sit at home and get the videos when they come out.
My tip is be strategically social. If there are certain people you'd like to speak to, go try see if you can find them. Another tip I'd like to give is you don't necessarily have to hang out. Sometimes you go to these parties and the parties are great, but you know they're often loud and noisy and it's you know hundreds of people. Whereas you know, I would say you know find 8 to 10 other people, book a restaurant, go out for dinner, you know, and just spend you know spend that evening with 10 people, talk geek, and then you know do something similar the next night with a different 10 people and just you know because that's a good sized community of people to do with and it doesn't add matter. Just put a tweet out saying anyone for dinner, you'll get 10 people, you know, to do dinner. It'll be quite easy. And that's great. And of course, you get better food than you're going to get at these parties where you might get some nibbles or something if you're lucky, or you'll grab something from a you know, a fast food shop on the way there or the way back. So that would be my tip. My prediction, you see, I think there's got to be something new in the keynotes.
Lion. Because, I think it's going to be Lion. Well, I think it's going to be a Lion marketing.
You see, I don't think Lion is enough because we already, you know, developers already have it.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's lots been gone out there. And, you know, there is this expectation from the press of something new. Now, it doesn't have to be huge. Whatever. I think people are right that we're probably not going to see hardware. It would surprise me. It'd be great if we did see an iPhone 5 because then I could go buy one because,
Have you broken your...
The phone that was in the rice that we made the pooey risotto out of later is fully working again. And I can't, you know... My trouble is, if they don't announce an iPhone 5, is it going to be September? In which case, it's not worth buying a 4. If it's going to be February, it is worth buying a 4. So there's no indication. But I think they need to show something new. They need to show something for the press. Because don't forget, the first morning is a press event. So I am making, on the basis, I don't think it's new hardware. I don't think Lion's enough. Because remember with Leopard, they announced Leopard all that a year before they released it. And then a year later, they went through it. And they hadn't actually really added anything to it.
But the difference is that more so in those days, WWDC and the keynotes were aimed at developers.
Yeah.
These days, the keynote is a press event for launching something. Now, the press and the general public don't know a huge amount about Lion because it's been developer releases under NDA. So although we as developers know about it and what's in it...
They spoke about it in an event earlier on.
Yeah, but they can now go into all the detail and, they can show, and then he can stand at the end and say, and it's available in stores today.
Possibly. Is that big enough, though, for what is their only big event of the year now? I know it's for developers. Anyway, I reckon the one more thing is we are going to see the first new features from iOS 5.
I think his one more thing will be that we've destroyed all the patent trolls. We've got rid of Lodsys for you.
I think the one more thing will be the 6-inch MacBook Air.
The 5-inch iPad.
Yeah.
So then to integrate...
Can I just point out, last time I actually went to the WWDC keynote, which wasn't last year but the year before... within 7 minutes, I think it was, of being in the room, every single one of my predictions was shattered and gone out the window. So if you are basing any financial investment on anything I have just said, the only words I can say to you is you are an idiot and you should withdraw it. John, you were trying to probably say something far more interesting.
Yes, so Uli had a very good suggestion. He says, you know, print up a shirt, make something that is a conversation starter which reveals some, you know, oddball interest that you have. So Scotty, I don't know, you could like print up t-shirts saying, you know, touch my 6-inch MacBook or something like that.
Oh, no, I did a couple of years ago, I had some t-shirts printed up where it just said on the back, if you're following me now, why not follow me on Twitter and put my Twitter address. I got about 700 or 800 new followers from that, which was good, but that's been done now, so there we are. Right, we've been on the air for sort of 50 odd minutes. We'd like to keep the show around 45 minutes because apparently that is the perfect podcast length
for somebody to fall asleep to,
and we want to be we want
without running the battery down too much.
We want to be perfect in every way, and this show has been pretty darn close to perfect. I mean, this is a show. I mean, what better show are you going to get presented by three bald-headed men? Yeah, with you know.
bold predictions.
Can I just jump in and do a quick shout out here? Because I did some tweets a while ago, I'll be quick, I promise, right. Saying that I was bored of Mac Break Weekly and I was looking for something else. And I found a podcast called British Mac, which has obviously got a British slant to it, and it's British humour.
And if you're not British, you are going to find this the wackiest thing
ever. Even
as
an American, you'll quite enjoy it. But it is very, very good. And if you as a developer want to see how non-developers see what's going on in the Mac world, these sort of podcasts are great. And British Mac, fantastic fun. Well worth a listen.
That's great. That's a good recommendation. I don't mind you recommending other people's podcast on my podcast.
You're technical, though.
That's true.
This is an alcoholic pundit. I'm sure he won't mind me saying he's alcoholic. You'll understand if you listen to him.
I think probably my most controversial recommendation ever is I think on we were doing a Mac developer roundtable. And Rich Siegel was on there, mm-hmm. who's the developer of BB Edit, and Mark Azara was on there, whose pick of the week was TextMate. So there we are. So you're not there. So that's great. So, John, do you have any other podcasts you like listening to?
No, there's only one True Light, and that's us.
What a sad life he must have.
That's because they won't ever let him out of the cupboard.
I've lost all respect for Family Church, you know, the people that were predicting the end of the world, so I've unsubscribed to them. So.
Well, I think this is a moment. Actually, I listened to a couple more. I listened to, obviously, Core Intuition.
Yep.
Daniel Jelcutt and Manta Reese. I know it's some people love it, some people hate it. I actually really enjoy Build and Analyze by Marco Arment from Dan Benjamin on the 5x5 network. That's really good. It's called Build and Analyze, but it's more about developer philosophy and coffee. He talks a lot about coffee, but I love coffee.
Do you listen to any non-developer Mac-related ones to get...
No, I used to. I used to listen to Mac Break Weekly, and I would listen to often. What's Adam Christensen's one that way? And I would also listen to about four or five. But in the last 6 months, I've virtually stopped. So I listen to just some very select podcasts now, and because I'm quite a select person, right? We are about to be raptured, so we're going to go now. So when your screen goes dark, it means you have been left behind. So
they can't see.
Sorry, wrong direction.
If you are on the audio, that was quite a funny rapture joke from John in video, but you will never see. John, remind us about where people can find you, and I'm going to put your Memory Miner website on the screen while you do so. No, I'm not, because that's just a blank page. Now I'm going to put your Memory Miner screen on the page while you do so.
Well, you can find out all about Memory Miner at memoryminer.com. You can read my blog about creating Memory Miner at memoryminer.com/blog. And you can follow me on Twitter as @Djembe, Djembe, like the West African instrument.
I'm not sure memoryminer.com might sell better. I don't know.
Probably will.
There we are. Simon, game developer extraordinaire, tell us about yourself.
You can find me on the web at ottersoftware.com. I've also got a blog at ottersoftwareblog.com, and I'm on Twitter as SGAW.
And I am Scotty. I am on Twitter at MacDevNet. And you can find all my training material, training videos at iDeveloper.tv. And that's good. Oh, please go to iTunes, give us some reviews. The last review was about January sometime, so obviously there. It would be brilliant if we could get 30 reviews this week. Come on, there's thousands of you out there listening. If just 30 of you can go give reviews, that would really help.
Good reviews.
Yeah, no, honest reviews. I don't want people to say we're good if we're not any good. Yeah, maybe actually that's not such a good idea. Yeah, there we are. Okay, so this is it. This is the sound of the rapture. We'll be right back.